This is episode 90 of the 99 Forever podcast. I'm Eric Friesen, and my guest tonight is making his seventh appearance on the podcast. He's the founder of HeavyHockey.com and the host of the Oilers Live podcast, Michael Hebert. Michael, good to have you back on the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. Love being on 99 Forever podcast.
Yeah, man, it's been a while. I think September was the last time that we recorded one. So about a month before the regular season got started. And now here we are, playoff time. And with the regular season just wrapping up on Thursday, we're now less than 24 hours away from the start of the Edmonton Oilers 2024 playoff run. How excited are you for the return of playoff hockey in oil country?
Oh, I'm excited for playoff hockey, but like super excited for Oilers playoff hockey. I won't get much sleep tonight, I'll tell you that.
And I mean, it's hard to believe now that we went 13 out of 14 years without watching this team in the playoffs before this recent run of five straight trips to the dance now. So that's in the past, and it's just great to consistently have the Oilers back in the playoffs year after year.
Yeah, I mean, now we expect it, right? Yeah. I watched the puck drop in Vancouver tonight between Nashville and Vancouver. They've waited 9 years, and it's exciting for fans of a team after such a long hiatus.
What do you remember in 2017 about that first time that the Oilers got back to the postseason in 11 years?
Well, given the fact that the last time we were in the postseason, it was a pretty good result. I just remember thinking anything can happen. And then, you know, like we've come to expect, anything can happen when you've got Connor McDavid.
Yeah.
So that's how I felt in 2017. And it was amazing. The playoffs were amazing that year, and it just felt good to be back.
Yeah, a lot of cool moments. I think everyone remembers the David Desharnais goal in Game 5 against the Sharks. A huge goal, probably the biggest goal scored since the 06 Cup run. And Leon Draisaitl actually outscored McDavid during that playoff run. He really took the next step as a player in his evolution that year, because McDavid had already won a scoring title that season, had been the 100-point player, and Draisaitl had a really good year too with 77 points. But I feel like it was during those 2017 playoffs when he reached that next level as a superstar in the league.
I think it was when I realized just how gritty a player Draisaitl is, and upped my respect for him as a clutch performer. He was amazing those playoffs, and it's tough to say when you've got McDavid in your lineup, but he was certainly, it could have been, he was the best player or McDavid was the best player. It would have been a toss up for either.
And they were one goal away from going to the conference final that spring. It's funny, when Corey Perry was signed in late January and he did his introductory press conference at Rogers Place, I can't remember who it was, but I thought it was funny that one of the reporters asked him about the very controversial no goaltender interference call in Anaheim that ultimately led to the Ducks pulling off the come from behind double overtime win take back the series lead, and they ended up going on to play Nashville in the conference finals that year. I still believe that if they would have got by them, they would have given Nashville a run for their money and possibly could have got to the Stanley Cup final that year. And I mean, that was just the second year of McDavid's career. So we definitely thought that at that point, there would be more years like this to come. And unfortunately they missed the playoffs the following two seasons, but now we're back to, you know, where we sort of thought that this team should be in those early days.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, a lot is made of the legacy that, whether Connor McDavid leaves a legacy or not, but certainly now he's showing that he's capable of getting the team there. The rest we'll see.
And I mean, he's done everything there really is to do in the regular season. And I can recall Wayne Gretzky saying in an interview, maybe 2 or 3 years ago, that McDavid's legacy will be built in the playoffs. And he's just such an ultra competitive guy. And you know that he's been waiting for this time of year all season. So I just can't wait to see what he's going to do tomorrow night, especially now that he's had the added rest. I mean, he missed three straight games while he was dealing with lower body injury, and then coming back from that, he really didn't play very much in the San Jose game. And even in Arizona, his minutes were down, and then he sat the last game of the season. So he's had plenty of rest time over the past 2 weeks, and I expect him to hit the ground running tomorrow night, as I do with the entire team.
Yeah, 100%. The when we saw McDavid fly down the ice for that first goal.
Yeah.
You know, that's classic McDavid, you know, just so fast. And when he comes back from an injury, he somehow just seems to be better. It's like we instantly forget how good he is. we're reminded quite quickly.
I was sitting right at center ice on the upper deck for that goal. So I had a great view of it. And at first I thought that he had actually got the 100th assist to reach the milestone. And then when we saw the replay, it banked off a skate and in. And I think it's the only time in my entire life of watching this guy that I've been disappointed that he scored a goal, because I was really hoping, as did everyone in the entire arena, that would have been the assist. And thankfully he did get it late in the second period, but yeah, you could tell that there was no rust there in his first game back to action.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And you know, like I said, as the regular season was as great as it was, the Oilers players and fans have anxiously been waiting for the regular season to end for the past 2 weeks and for the playoffs to get going here. And tonight we're going to be previewing their first round series against the Los Angeles Kings. But first, I want to briefly look back at the 2023-24 season, where the Oilers finished second in the Pacific Division with a 49-27-6 record, I should say, for 104 points. It marked their third consecutive 100-point season and 10th in franchise history. The Oilers also secured home ice advantage in the first round of the playoffs for the fifth consecutive season. Michael, for this team to finish ninth overall in the league after the adversity they faced in October and November, does this season have to be considered one of the most impressive in franchise history?
Oh, you know, absolutely. In fact, I just don't feel like it's had enough talk, even outside of Oilers circles. The craziness that was this season and just how dominant down the stretch the Oilers were. I mean, if you can just remove that sort of initial, what was it, 14, 15 games, this team was absolutely phenomenal. And, you know, when they'd suffer a loss, I think we'd all wait and think that this was the point at which they might, you know, go to another losing streak or something along those lines, but they never did. They never did more than bend for a game. Then they were back on the winning track. It was outstanding.
Definitely. And, you know, after playing in five playoff series over the past 2 years, the Oilers were widely considered Stanley Cup favorites prior to the season. And it wasn't just pundits from in Edmonton saying it. You were hearing media people from around the league calling the Oilers, if not the favorite, one of the favorites to win it all this year. But I don't think anyone could have imagined that this team would be tied for last place in the NHL 12 games into the season. However, in the final 70 games of the season, the Oilers were the best team in the entire league. Like, Edmonton has been a juggernaut since Chris Knobloch replaced Jay Woodcroft behind the bench. Since November 11th, the Oilers ranked first in the NHL in wins, first in points, first in goal differential, second in goals for, sixth in goals against, third on the power play, and seventh on the penalty kill. So the Oilers were near the top of the league in virtually every category over the past 5 months. And if it wasn't for that terrible start to the season, I think they would have been right there with the New York Rangers and the Dallas Stars in contention for the President's Trophy this year. Moreover, when you factor in that this team had a historic 16-game winning streak, as well as another 8-game winning streak prior to that, they also had just 5 regulation losses at home after the coaching change in November. So I think this season was undoubtedly one of the most impressive in franchise history, and likely their best regular season since the 80s and early 90s dynasty.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't say any more of that any better than you. You know, a team's doing well when people are trying to find ways to discount just how well they're doing. And that was the Oilers in the final 70 games of the season, where, you know, just fans of other teams saying, yeah, but, you know, can they do this? Can they do that? And, the Oilers continued to prove them wrong. You know, it's kind of like with Connor McDavid, everybody's looking for a reason why he's not the best in the world. This year, they were looking for a reason why the Oilers weren't the best in the league. Yeah. And they showed in the final 70, they are the cream of the crop, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I mean, right there with them. And I don't know if I thought they were going to win the President's Trophy coming into the season, but I figured that they would be right there with the top teams in the Western Conference. I mean, let's not forget, they were 2 points shy of finishing first in the conference last year before Vegas won their final game of the regular season to vault ahead of them. But this is a team that has been trending towards becoming an elite team in the league the last few years. We've seen them get better year after year. Now, the Oilers did have a better regular season in 2022-23 than they did this year. But I think that most people would agree that this team is still better than last year's team, despite finishing with five fewer points. Like we said, that is largely due to the fact that they had such a terrible start to the regular season and were basically digging themselves out of a hole for the first 2 or 3 months. And I think it was Frank Saravelli from Daily Faceoff who said the Oilers' internal goal was to get back to 500 by the 40-game mark of the regular season. And they cleared that bar well before Christmas. And from then on, it was just a constant climb up the standings to the point where it looked like they might even have a chance to win the Pacific Division, which no one would have predicted back in November when they were sitting tied with the San Jose Sharks for 32nd place.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest there. I know you are the, eternal optimist when it comes to the Oilers. I, at one point, called the season. I thought just before Woodcroft, was let go, I thought the Oilers were done. I thought, it was time to figure out what was wrong and make some changes. And I didn't think the Oilers were going to make the playoffs.
And I don't think you were alone in that. No. I mean, if you just look at Oilers Twitter, there were a lot of upset Oilers fans, and rightfully so. When you come into the season with massive expectations like the Oilers had this year, getting off to that dismal of a start, of course, is going to have a hockey-crazed city like Edmonton freaking out about it. But I just never thought that this team was going to miss the playoffs. They were too good to miss the playoffs. There's too much talent there. Now, did I think that they were probably going to have to settle for a wild card spot? Yes. I thought that they'd probably be able to get the first or second wild card spot, and they'd have a very difficult first round of the playoffs going up against one of the two division champions in either the Central or the Pacific. But I never thought that they would outright miss the playoffs. Just a team with Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl in their prime can't miss. And they just, as bad as things were, you could just see that all it was going to take is one winning streak to turn things around. And then they did have that 8-game heater, which got them back on track. And then after that, they lost 3 games in a row in mid-December, and people were starting to get worried again. But like we said, after that, they followed it up with that historic 16-game winning streak. And from there, they basically never looked back. Any time that there was a little blip where they'd lose a game or two, they'd always bounce back with a much better effort the next night. And because they were able to just shrug off a loss and get back on track so quickly, it's why they were able to get to the spot that they ultimately finished in this season.
Yeah, and also, I mean, let's not forget, at the beginning of the season, it looked like LA and Vegas couldn't lose.
No.
Right? And, it wasn't even so much that I felt like the Oilers couldn't play well enough to give themselves a chance, but it just felt like the other teams were going to be, rock solid all season long. They weren't. As it turns out, and it went down right to the wire, right? To think that Vegas got the last wild card spot after the start that they had is crazy.
They started 11-0-1, and it was less than 2 weeks ago that they were sitting outside of a playoff spot. So, I mean, if you would have told someone 5 months ago when you looked at the NHL standings, hey, fast forward to April, the Oilers will be competing for a division title and Vegas won't be sitting currently in a playoff spot, I don't think anyone would have believed that. You probably could have got some great Vegas odds there.
Yeah. I mean, if only.
But you know, like, I look at this, and the Oilers were a team that we knew could come through with this. The past 2 years, they've also had these bad spells at some point during the season where it looked like they might potentially miss. I think back 2 years ago when Dave Tippett was let go and Jay Woodcroft was brought in February, the Oilers weren't in a playoff spot at that time, and he got them back on track, and they ultimately went to the Western Conference Final. And then last year, it was in early January, the Oilers had a terrible game against the LA Kings on the road, and that was sort of a turning point for them because they were just clinging to a wild card spot at that time. And I believe they only had 5 regulation losses in the final 39 games of the season, and that ultimately got them back to second place in the Pacific. So even though they might be in these tough spots where it looks like things are going to collapse, and you know, this could be the end of the McDavid era because they're not going to live up to expectations, it's always turned back around and they've got back to where this team is supposed to be. So that's why I was never fully down on them, and I thought that despite where they were in the standings in November, that they would be able to ultimately come through and get back to where we wanted to see them.
Yeah, I agreed. And I mean, as I said, I did write them off, but am I 100% surprised? No. I mean, if any team could do it, it's a team led by Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl, and they got it done.
Definitely. All right, so the Oilers were knocked out of the playoffs by the eventual Stanley Cup champions in each of the past two seasons. In 2022, the Oilers reached the Western Conference Final, where they were swept by the Colorado Avalanche. And last spring, the Oilers were eliminated in the second round of the playoffs by the Vegas Golden Knights in 6 games. Michael, Wayne Gretzky has always said that the 80s Oilers had to learn how to lose before hoisting hockey's holy grail. After suffering through a string of playoff heartbreaks themselves, do you think this group is better equipped to win the cup this year than they were in either of the past two seasons?
You know, I don't know that they're better equipped. I think they're just a better team, like all around, just overall. And you know, I loved Woodcroft for a good part of his tenure as a coach. But I like the way Knobloch thinks, and I like how he coaches the team. And so maybe it is better equipped, but they're better equipped from a roster perspective, among other things. So it's a lot of different reasons.
Yeah, it could be experience, new additions, all these factors. I mean, even maybe having a new voice behind the bench. It's hard for us as fans to know how big of an impact Knobloch has really had, or could they still do this if they would have stuck with Jay Woodcroft? But, you know, I just really believe this team is more primed to win the cup than ever before. I mean, you have Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl, who are each at the height of their powers. Statistically, they are the two most dominant playoff performers of their generation. There's also more talent around them than at any point during their time in the league. You look at Zach Hyman scoring a team-leading 54 goals this season. Evan Bouchard had over 80 points as a defenseman. They had 520 goal scorers and 10 players with double digits in goals. The Oilers have a lethal power play that somehow gets even deadlier in the postseason. And, you know, they're also vastly improved defensively. Stuart Skinner posted elite numbers in goal for the bulk of the season. And if you look at their in-season additions, as we kind of just alluded to, Corey Perry brings tons of experience and nastiness to the bottom six, which is something that this team was missing. He's also produced offensively, you know, more than I think a lot of fans expected. Adam Henrique has fit in nicely as a complimentary scoring winger, and he can also kill penalties. Sam Carrick, a gritty fourth line center who isn't afraid to punch above his weight. And while the West is as deep as ever, the Oilers' path to the conference final isn't as daunting as some of the other contenders. They're on the side of the Western Conference bracket with the Kings, the Vancouver Canucks, and the Nashville Predators. And I like the Oilers' chances to beat whichever of these two teams they end up facing. And if they run into the Dallas Stars or the Colorado Avalanche or the Winnipeg Jets in the Final Four, that team will almost certainly have endured some tougher playoff series than the Oilers will have played. And then if they get to the final and run into a team like the Rangers or the Carolina Hurricanes, the Oilers would be the underdog in that series, but I wouldn't bet against a team with McDavid in his first opportunity to play for the Cup. So the Oilers' time to win is now, and it's fully within their control.
Yeah, you touched on something that's equally important, which is their path to the conference final, right? Like they, you know, I would say that the top teams in the West are all coming out of the top half of this bracket, if you want to call it that. Dallas, Vegas, Colorado, and the Jets. Either all those teams, you know, I think are contenders. Whereas, you know, I'd suggest that the lower half of that is in the other side of the bracket, with the Oilers being a contender in my mind.
Yeah, and I think a big thing about that is, well, the Central Division probably has a few stronger teams, but the fact that Vegas also crossed over to that side, that's really a helps the Oilers a lot. And if you think back to 2 years ago, they had to go through LA again, and after that, they ended up playing Calgary in that epic Battle of Alberta series that the Oilers won in five games, and that was probably their clearest path to this point. Now looking at it this year, I mean, it's like we said, it's not as daunting as it was last year when they had to play Vegas in the second round. And you know, that just brings us to our first round opponent for the Oilers, which wasn't decided until the final game of the regular season, and it looked like it was going to be the Golden Knights. However, they lost to the lowly Anaheim Ducks on home ice in game 82, and the Kings beat the Chicago Blackhawks in overtime, setting up a first round series between Edmonton and LA for the third consecutive year. So tonight I want to break down this matchup position by position. Let's start from the crease out. It'll be Stuart Skinner going head to head with Cam Talbot. Michael, who do you give the edge to in goal in this series and why?
I've got to say Stuart Skinner. I mean, Talbot, you know, I think has been streaky for part of the year. And from a goaltending perspective, I think Skinner's had to deal with a lot more. The Kings are a defensive juggernaut this year. And so I don't think that Talbot has faced the high danger chances that Skinner has. I just think Skinner is the overall better goalie. And I'm a Talbot fan, obviously, given the fact that he played in Edmonton in 2017.
Yeah, I think that, you know, there's still a lot of Oilers fans that have a soft spot for Cam Talbot. This is a guy who came in 2015. The Oilers needed a goalie to start the Connor McDavid era, and that was sort of Glenn Sather's last move with the Rangers before stepping aside, was trading him to his old club where he had so much success with the Oilers back in the 1980s, dealing him to then Oilers GM Peter Chiarelli. And Cam Talbot was ready at that point to step into a starter's role. He had been backing up Henrik Lundqvist with the Rangers. And, you know, I still have to say, though, I think Skinner is the clear-cut best goalie in the series. I mean, he was one of many players on the Oilers that had a rough start to the season, but he got back on track around American Thanksgiving and posted a sparkling 32-9-4 record with a .916 save percentage in his final 46 games. And that's a large enough sample size for me to be confident in him between the pipes going into the playoffs. I know that he did fall short of expectations last year against Vegas, but we have to remember that this was a rookie goaltender who was coming into his first postseason experience, and having him go up against a team like Vegas, that would be tough on any goaltender making their, you know, first trip to the postseason. So I don't think that it's fair to, you know, put too much blame on him, especially when he was so important in getting the Oilers to the playoffs in the first place. And like, he can steal a game on occasion, but with the offensive firepower that the Oilers possess, Skinner just needs to give his team consistently steady goaltending for them to win on most nights. He also stopped 69 of 72 shots in his last two games against the Kings, which is another encouraging stat going into the series. And at the other end of the ice, Talbot is a goalie this team knows well. I just talked about how, you know, he came into the team right at the beginning of the McDavid era and played with them until January of 2019 when he was dealt to the Flyers. But Talbot's season was basically the reverse of Skinner. I mean, he was playing lights out through the first 2 months of the season, but since Christmas, he had a sub 500 record and his save percentage dropped from 925 to 904. And having to go up against McDavid and Draisaitl night after night for the next 2 weeks isn't going to be an easy task. So for me, the Oilers win the goaltending matchup. And I also think the fact that he's played with those guys we talked about, and most of the guys who he was teammates with that are still with the team are the Oilers' best players. So they have a keen understanding of his style of play and how to exploit his weaknesses. Yep. So yeah, I'll say that it's pretty cut and dry for me that the Oilers win the goaltending matchup in this series.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, you touched on it. Skinner, you know, he went in as a rookie last year. He was put in a tough spot. This is not the same Skinner from last year. And while the defense hasn't changed much in its appearance, I think they've changed a ton in how they play.
Yeah.
And so, you know, he's going to get a little bit more support, hopefully a lot more in terms of the defensive play of the Oilers as well. And I think this Ekholm Bouchard pairing has really, you know, come a long way this year. Desharnais as well. You know, he had some lapses last year at key times that put Skinner in a bad spot. I think that's going to change as well. So different team in front of him means different player. I just think that, goaltending wise, 100%. I don't think Talbot compares to the skill level that Skinner does. And given the difference in the Oilers this year, I think they'll have the goaltending advantage.
And that sort of leads into my next question now, Michael. How do you think the Oilers' blue line compares to the Kings?
Well, I mean, the Kings were defensive juggernauts this year. Like they, they're just solid up and down all three pairings. And, you know, it's not the defensive lines, just like these teams, can't be compared in the same sort of way. They play differently. Right. And, you know, there's no Bouchard on the Kings, right? There's no Ekholm on the Kings. Doughty is still going strong. Gavrikov is solid. Matt Roy, very solid defense on the Kings, but the Oilers give you a little bit more dynamic pairings than you'll see on the Kings defense for sure.
Yeah, I look at these two blue lines, and I saw the lines that both teams media guys were tweeting out from their respective practices today. And when you compare them head to head, the Oilers might not have the deepest defensive core in the league, but I think that they can still match up pretty well against the Kings. And as I mentioned earlier, this team has improved its defensive play, at least its team defense, for most of the season. And Knobloch really cleaned up a lot of their defensive schemes since taking over behind the bench. I think that Mark Stewart and Paul Coffey also deserve a lot of credit for the team's improved defensive play, too. Stewart's had a big impact on the penalty kill, and Coffey has been pushing the defenders to get the puck up the ice to the forwards quicker. And Edmonton's top pairing of Ekholm and Bouchard, who you just mentioned, that pairing is among the best in the entire league. Bouchard finished fourth in league scoring by a defenseman this season with 82 points. And Ekholm is also an excellent all-around defenseman, posting a team-leading plus 44 rating. The pairing of Nurse and CeCe has struggled in the playoffs the past 2 years, especially against elite forwards off the rush. I think Nurse is a much better player than he gets credit for, though, and I'm always a big Nurse defender. But he and CeCe do get outscored more often than not together. And, you know, that could be a major hurdle to overcome if the Oilers do go on a deep playoff run this year. I think we will probably see Troy Stetcher slot in alongside Nurse at some point during the playoffs. Ken Holland didn't pick him up to have him sit in the press box for the entire playoff run. I'm confident that he's going to get in there at some point. And in the few viewings that we had of those two together, I actually liked them as a pairing. So I'd be interested to see that again, especially when they get into some series against teams with some really quick attacking forwards. And then you've got the Kulak and Desharnais third pairing, and I think they're really solid. They complement each other well, and they've also seen increased minutes against elite competition as of late too.
Yeah, Desharnais is heads and tails a different defenseman than he was last year. And I think when it comes to Nurse, you know, and I've commented on this multiple times throughout the season, is he's just making better decisions this year. And it's because there's a reduced requirement from him to be the all-star defenseman and do everything on this team. Now that Ekholm and Bouchard have kind of taken the reins as our top D pairing, I think it takes a ton of pressure off a Nurse just to do the right things and not try to be everything to the team. And he's responded well. I've loved his game this year. I can't say that there's been a night or many nights where I've been upset with the way Nurse played.
No.
And yeah, I know CC's got, you know, his detractors, but you know, he's still been pretty solid. And so whether we see Nurse and CC or Nurse and Stetcher, I just think that the stable play by Nurse will carry that deep pairing in the defense, and will also, you know, Nurse is a good big physical guy. I think he'll be important important part of the playoffs this year.
Yeah, without a doubt. And you know, while CC isn't really known for his offense, I think it is worth noting that he has 5 goals since the All-Star break after going over 100 and I believe 20 games without scoring a goal. So some unexpected offensive contributions from CC there. And you know, looking at the Kings blue line, Drew Doughty still plays a ton, and he's their best defender at both ends of the ice. And we know Doughty always gets up to play the Oilers and will be highly motivated after losing to them in the first round in back-to-back years. He and Anderson are a real pain to play against, and they'll be constantly looking to take runs or cheap shots at the Oilers stars in this series. Still, they aren't on par with the Oilers top pairing of Bouchard and Ekholm. And Gavrikov and Roy are another shutdown pair that really likes to lean on you. Nurse, I think, is better than either of them, but the pairing of Gavrikov and Roy together are probably a little more solid in their own zone than Nurse and CeCe. And I like the Oilers' third pairing more than Spence and Englund. So while I might not be able to say this about every team the Oilers face in the playoffs this year, I give the advantage to the Oilers on defense in this series.
Yeah, well, I mean, and when you look, like, and I mentioned it right off the top, is the Oilers' D are far more dynamic. And in talking about CC, he had 25 points this year. That puts him at a tie for second in defensive scoring for the Kings. There, outside of Drew Doughty, who had 50 points, next up was Matt Roy, who had 25 points.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if you consider that, you know, the Oilers from a defensive standpoint are getting a lot more offensive production from their D than the LA Kings are. And, you know, down the stretch, the last 70 games, the Oilers have been one of the best defensive teams in the league.
Yeah.
So, you know, a defensive team that can put points on the board, yeah, I'd give them the advantage, no doubt.
Yeah, and I think that just on the surface, people would probably look at the Kings and say that their blue line is better than the Oilers without actually really digging into it, because the Kings are just viewed as a better defensive team overall. So that's just going to be the assumption. But when you actually break it down pair by pair, as I just did, I think that you can make the case that the Oilers win almost every single one of their matchups. The one that you might give in favor to the Kings, like I said, would be the Gavrikov and Roy pairing against the Oilers' second pairing. Michael, how do you think the Oilers' forward stack up now against the Kings up front?
Yeah, you know, it comes down to defense again versus offense. You know, the Oilers offensively, it's not even, you know, I think I read an article from The Athletic where it said this is the largest offensive disparity between any series. You know, it goes without saying when you've got Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl on the team that you're going to have the offensive advantage. But you take in the fact that the Kings themselves, I don't think they had a point per game player this season at all. In fact, I know they don't.
No, their leading scorer was Adrian Kempe at 75 points in 77 games. So
yeah, a little. So below it kind of gives you an idea of what kind of team they are. You know, if they're going to beat the Oilers, it's not going to be by scoring tons of goals.
Yeah. I try to look at these two rosters and, you know, this is probably where I think the Oilers have the biggest advantage in the series. And I'll give the Kings credit here because they do have some offensively gifted forwards, but the Oilers' high-end players are far superior to the Kings' top players. And that's probably been the biggest reason why the Oilers have won the head-to-head matchups the past 2 years. LA simply can't match the all-world talent of McDavid and Draisaitl. The dynamic duo have combined for 44 points in 13 playoff games against the Kings over the past two seasons. And there's no reason to think that they won't put up the same numbers or better this year. The Kings have 520 goal scorers. Well, so do the Oilers, except their three top scorers all had more goals than the Kings team leader. And, you know, when I'm looking at the lines that Stauffer put out today, I would personally like to see Nugent Hopkins back on the first line with McDavid and Hyman because that was the best line in the league all season. But having Henrique on there works too, because he has a similar skill set to Nugent Hopkins. So he's fine on the top line. It also allows Knobloch to reunite Nugent Hopkins with Draisaitl. And then you can have Fogle, who had a career year on the right side there. So that gives the Oilers two potent first lines with elite centers. And when you can round out the top nine with three big bodies like Holloway, McLeod, and Perry, two of which can really fly, it's going to be extremely difficult for the Kings to shut down the Oilers, especially if they get into penalty trouble. So I think top to bottom, the Oilers are the better team. And this has the potential to be a short series.
Well, and we, you know, keep mentioning his name, but this is playoff Perry. We're about to see. We started seeing a little bit of how he got under people's skin, you know, last little bit of the season. But he's a different player come playoffs.
Oh yeah,
and I think, you know, he's a difference maker. I don't know if he's my X factor. We'll get to that. But he certainly, you know, he makes a change, and his veteran leadership in that room is only going to help this team move forward. So, you know, there's a lot of reasons to be excited about this forward squad versus the Kings forward squad. And I don't, you know, it's not close. There's there's no comparison. The Kings aren't going to, you know, I'll say it over and over again. They're not going to beat the Oilers by being a scoring juggernaut.
No,
that's just not how this is going to go.
Like, you look at Corey Perry, like, Oilers fans know him very well. And we've seen this team go up against him on the Ducks for many years. And especially in that 2017 disappointing series, as we talked about earlier, that was one that still hurts. And you just know that this guy is a gamer, though. And yeah, is he a dirty player? Yes. You know, does he go over the line constantly? Sure. But it's so refreshing to have that guy on our side now than having to play against him. And, you know, Connor McDavid said as much when Perry signed with the Oilers in January. And if you want to know how focused this guy is come playoff time, he was talking about playoffs in January when the signing happened. I think it was at his first press conference when he basically said that, you know, there's no better time of year than the playoffs. And for those 8 weeks, you're just completely dialed in and nothing else matters except winning and focused on just reaching your ultimate goal. So to have a guy like that, who's won a Stanley Cup, who's been to the finals four times, who's played 196 playoff games, who scored some clutch goals in the postseason before, I think that adding a player like him is invaluable to this team. And sure, he might be 38 years old now, and he's not the player that he was in the early 2010s when he won the Hart Trophy and scored 50 goals back in 2011. But this is still a guy who raises his game come playoff time, as you said. And whether he's playing on the first line or the third line, or whether he's on the power play, or if he doesn't get any opportunities on the man advantage, you know that he's going to make the most of every opportunity he gets on the ice, because he's just such a winner. He's such a competitor, and he just is going to give you everything he has. And I don't think you can have enough guys like that on your team.
Yeah, there are two guys that have been basically in the finals every year, right? Pat Maroon and Corey Perry, right? And, you know, they both...
Former line mates in Anaheim,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, that's right. And they both elevate their game come playoff time. They're not guys that, you know, in the regular season, you get excited about every game. But look at Pat Maroon in the Boston game against Toronto. Like,
say what you want about Pat Maroon, but good teams want him.
Exactly. So, you know. Yeah, and those kind of players, they know what they need to do, and they're not out there to be a point of game guy come playoff time, but they're out there to make a difference, be a difference on the bench, right, make the hits when they need to make the hits, get in guys' face when they need to get in their face. This year, one of the great things I think about the Oilers is Leon Draisaitl has started to be that guy. Well, he was that guy, actually.
He has some snarl. He's got
that snarl. Yeah. And Evander Kane, who, while he's questionable for game one, I think he'll be in. He's another guy that, ups that level. And at the start, at least, it looks like all three of them will be playing different lines. That's a lot of people in your face if you're the LA Kings.
And if you ever want to load up a third or fourth line with Kane and Perry on it, I mean, that can give the opposition a ton of fits, because whether they're scoring goals or banging bodies or just kind of doing some dirty stuff when the ref isn't looking, they're going to find a way to make the most of their shifts. And when you play teams like LA or Vegas who have a lot of rats, You got to have a few guys who can be dirtbags themselves. And Corey Perry is not afraid to do dirtbag behavior out there.
Absolutely. Yeah. And come playoff time, that's important. And something that the Oilers had last year with Evander Kane, and it led to some success.
And even back in the 1980s, the Oilers had plenty of guys. Ken Linsman's nickname was the Rat.
Yeah.
And, they often are remembered for their great offensive exploits, and they should, because they're the most dominant scoring team of all time. But I think a lot of people forget, aside from being the best offensive team ever, they were also the toughest team of that era in the 1980s as well, and that they couldn't be intimidated. So other teams would come in there and have to worry about, we're either going to get beat on the scoreboard or get beat up in a fight. So, and I remember in the 1987 Boys on the Bus documentary, Glenn Sather saying, I'd rather have a jerk play for me than a wimp. And, if you had to pick which, categories, some of the players that you just listed there would fall under, I mean, it would be the jerk category. But, at this time of year, when, the physicality and the stick work and everything ratchets up so much because of the intensity of the games, it's nice to have a few guys like that on your side.
100%. And we've got some guys that can do that and score at the same time. So yeah, I love the way the Oilers are positioned to play that style of game this season.
And, one thing you talked about there, Michael, is that for the Kings to have success in the series, they can't play the run and gun style that the Oilers play. Like, they play that suffocating, boring 1-3-1 trap system. They're a counterattack team that likes to wait for a team to make a mistake, and then they capitalize on it. And they're willing to just sit back all night and try and bait you into, turning over the puck at a bad spot, and then that's when they'll attack. And they're not a team that you want to let get a lead, because they will just sit on that lead and really not even pursue a forecheck at all. They're just going to sit back and watch the clock drain down. So it's very important for the Oilers to have the lead in this series and force the opposition to go, kind of break out of that system and push a little harder, because then it's going to open the game up. And that's really the only way you're going to be able to get the Kings to do that is by the Oilers getting the lead. And I think having home ice advantage is such a big thing, because it will control the matchups, especially when you know that they're going to hard match Kopitar and Doughty against McDavid and Draisaitl. That goes without saying, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But, you know, obviously McDavid's one of those guys like Gretzky, like the greats, that you can match all you want.
You can shadow him all night, but he's still going to get his cookies. Like, they're still going to, you know, maybe you limit to him to 2 points that game instead of three. But, you know, he's one of those guys where you can't stop him. You can only hope to contain him.
Exactly. And I think, you know, what the interesting thing about this series is I think the Kings are a better team than they were last year. But the Oilers are just a little bit better even than that.
No, I disagree with you there.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I'll say it's like the Kings basically traded away their entire third line last year to bring in Pierre-Luc Dubois.
Yeah,
and
I thought was a mistake.
And the three players that went off to Winnipeg, I think, are a big reason why the Kings were so effective against the Oilers last year. All three of them have, you know, that those pest tendencies, and you know, are guys who can chip in a little bit. I mean, especially Vilardi, who now that he's in Winnipeg has started to realize his offensive potential, because he's been moved up the lineup where he was sort of held back from kind of cracking the top six in LA. But we've really seen him take off with the Jets. And I look at it last year, that, like I said, that third line was a really tough line for the Oilers to play against. And especially, I think, in game three, the one where there was the controversial high stick that led to, you know, a lot of controversy about should it have been reviewed or not in overtime. But I'll say bringing in Pierre-Luc Dubois on paper seemed like a move that would make the Kings a tougher team to play against. They thought by having Dubois, Kopitar, and Deneau down the middle would be a really tough matchup going up against McDavid and Draisaitl. They had to do something to try and shift the momentum in that series, because the Oilers aren't going away. I recall Todd McClellan saying that in his postseason exit interview last year after the Kings were eliminated, that they had to change something because what they were doing against the Oilers wasn't working. And this was a bold move by Kings GM Rob Blake, who thought, you know, we're going to bring in the big name player, sign him to that 8 year, $8.5 million deal. And, you know, they had to give up some valuable pieces. And Dubois has not lived up to expectations this year. He had a 16 goal season, I believe 46 points. And when you're paying a guy $8.5 million,
and one of the only players that's minus on the Kings roster.
And that's just not good enough. Now, this is year one of eight, and he's still only in his mid-20s, so he could turn things around. But for right now, he was probably one of the biggest underachievers in the league, right up there with Jonathan Huberdeau in Calgary. Arguably two of the worst contracts in the league. So I think that the Kings actually have taken a step back from where they were a year ago. You can argue who was better in goal between Korpisalo, who obviously left and signed that long-term deal in Ottawa, and bringing in Cam Talbot, who went from Ottawa to the Kings. Like, both teams just kind of switched goalies. But I think that that was a factor for him, that third line with Kapari and Vilardi and Iafallo, who, you know, it was a real pain to play against. So I'm not actually as worried going into the playoffs playing the Kings this year as I was last year. Not that I was ever overly concerned. I thought the Oilers were going to win all three series, but just looking at knowing the type of style that those guys played and that the Oilers won't have to go up against them this year, I think it will be an even easier matchup than they've played the past two seasons.
I did think it was a huge loss for the Kings, Vilardi. When he came in, he made a big difference in the series against Edmonton. He's a heart and soul player, you know, the kind of guy that lifts a team up. And it's no surprise he's doing. I'm not surprised at all. He's doing well in Winnipeg. In fact,
yeah, I think he was like a 13th overall pick or something like that. So you know, the expectations were that he was going to become a 25 plus goal scorer. He just never had the opportunity in LA, and now he's thriving in Winnipeg. And I have a friend that's a big Jets fan, and I told him I'd much rather Iafallo be a jerk playing for your team in the Central Division than being a jerk playing against my guys in the in the Pacific. So I think, I mean, look, every year the Oilers and Kings have played, they've been separated by 5 points. 2 years ago, the Oilers finished with 104 and the Kings had 99, which is the exact same number they finished with this year. And last year, the Oilers had 109 and the Kings had 104. So you could say, just by looking at the straight numbers, it's maintained at the same pace all 3 years. But I just feel like if you really just go beyond the wins and losses, you can see that this Oilers team is stronger than at any point in the McDavid era. Whereas I think that if you look at the Kings, they've probably taken at least a slight step back from where they were last season.
See, and I still disagree. I think the Kings are a better team than they were last year. Okay. I just think that the Oilers are better suited to play this version of the Kings.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just, when I look at the Kings from a defensive standpoint, they're one of the top teams in the league. But the challenge that, you know, they're going to have is the Oilers are, you know, one of the offensive juggernauts of the league. And they're playing against, you know, a guy in Knobloch as a coach that's been able to find the lines that work for this team at the right time. He's, you know, he's been good at keeping McDavid and Draisaitl apart until it's necessary to put them together. And I find that, you know, having guys like McDavid and Draisaitl where they're at the top of their career, it doesn't matter how good of a defensive team you are, right? Those types of players are going to get points. And so there's just, it doesn't matter how good LA is defensively. They could be good defensively. They could match up really well against any other team, I think. But the Oilers,
I mean, they've owned the Canucks this season. You know, they can't solve the Oilers. I mean, the Oilers won 3 out of 4 games against the Kings this year, and the one game they did win was a 4-0 game. And I didn't think the Oilers played particularly well that night. That was a game back in February, but I think back to December, they were down 2-0 to the Kings, scored 2 goals to tie it, and then ended up winning it in the shootout with Derek Ryan getting the shootout winner. And then they've played 2 games on home ice against the Kings within the past month, won both of those games. I was at one of them in late February. So I guess it'd be more like about a month and a half. But still, you know, this is a team that's shown that they know how to beat the Kings. And I don't know how much stock you want to put into what happened in the regular season, but I think we can put stock into what's happened in the playoffs the last 2 years. Yeah. And the Oilers have an 8-5 record against the Kings in the playoffs in those years.
Well, and they're not, I mean, the Oilers are not a 7-6 team anymore. They're like they don't need to outscore their defensive errors every game. They're better defensively than they've been last few years.
And you've seen the top players step up defensively too. Absolutely. I mean, I think that McDavid's defensive game has been it's been steadily improving over the last few years, but this year was probably one of his best. Now, I'm not saying he's a Selke trophy candidate or anything. I don't think he's ever going to be Patrice Bergeron, but for a player of his ilk to even increase your defensive responsibility a little bit makes you so much more valuable, because he's fast enough that he can skate back and strip a player from a puck and quickly turn it into an offensive chance the other way. So sometimes just by being even slightly more committed on the other side of the puck can lead to more scoring chances too.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, this team has just continued to do different things throughout the last, you know, 5-6 years. Connor McDavid seemingly, while people don't give him enough credit for it, maybe they do, but he reinvents himself every year based on what the team needs. Yeah. This year he's gone out and he's in the top 5 in hitters on the team, including defensemen, right?
Yeah.
And this is a guy that got 132 points.
he's not a small guy. And I think that's something that a lot of people forget. Like McDavid is 6'1" and 193 pounds. Now he's not a giant by any means, but that's still a solid frame.
Absolutely. Yeah. And he, and you know, I think DeBrusk has commented on it a ton. Like when he hits you, he hits hard.
Yeah.
Right. And people don't, I mean, he goes faster than everybody else.
Yes. So you're just building like up momentum by that alone. And it's, he can track someone down and make a hit when he wants to. So it's great to see him kind of take that next step. And, you know, I think I remember you saying on the podcast back in September when I last had you on that I was asking you what you thought he could do next or what would be the next step for him. And I believe you said that you didn't think that the next step he would take would be offensively. Like I believe you said he would, you know, be great offensively as he always is, but you thought the next step that he would take is as a leader.
Yeah. And I, you know, I don't know what was on my mind then, but it was, I think that's exactly what he's done. Like this year to me has been this, 100 assists, right? Mm-hmm. Like from a guy that scored 64 goals the year prior. Right. And he came out and he scored, you know, he got 100 assists. He still got his 30 plus goals, plus 35. And, you know, to be one of the top hitters on the team, right? He just came out every night and did whatever was needed for the team to win.
And let's not forget, his power play numbers were way down this year. He had north of 70 power play points last year, finished with just 44 this season. So he was getting it done at even strength too. And it makes you think if the Oilers power play can even click a little more, like last year they had the historic 31.4% on the power play, I believe. And then this year it dropped to what, 26.5, which was fourth in the NHL. I mean, still elite, but yeah, not the NHL record setting. If they can get back to where their power play was a year ago, because when they played the Kings in the first round in 2023, their power play was clicking at over 50% in that series. So it doesn't have to be at that level, but if it's even back in the 30s, then you really have to watch out because they can get it done at even strength. And if they can make that power play just get even a little bit better to being back to where we've seen it in the past, then yeah, the Kings are going to be in big trouble.
Absolutely.
Let's move on now. All right. So it goes without saying that McDavid and Draisaitl are the two most valuable players on the Oilers. I mean, they're two of the best players in the world, and they have the ability to take over a game whenever they step on the ice. But beyond McDavid and Draisaitl, who do you think will be the biggest difference maker for the Oilers in this series?
So, you know, there are a few different folks. I mean, there's the, you know, the obvious Zach Hyman. I mean, he's upped his game to another level even. But if I were to actually get down to it, I think it's going to be on defense. I think Ekholm, just he's been so solid. You know, he's picked up his game offensively whenever he needs to. Just down the stretch, he seemed to be ready. It's no surprise that he was injured during the first part of the season when the Oilers were struggling. Ekholm, to me, is the ultimate difference maker in this series.
Yeah, I think that's a great pick. And I'm tempted to say Stuart Skinner because you could make the case that your goaltender is often a difference maker when you win. But if he's healthy and he plays, I'm going to go with Evander Kane. This is a guy who led the league in playoff goals 2 years ago and has a unique role on the team as a goal scorer and also an enforcer. He can put the puck in the net on one shift and drop the gloves with the opposition's toughest players on the next shift. And it's rare to have a player like that in today's NHL. He's very much a throwback type of guy. And if the Kings are heavily focused on trying to shut down McDavid and Draisaitl, that could create more offensive opportunities for Kane. And we know that he loves to play the Kings and get under their skin. We've talked about the pests that they have. And, you know, if those guys start taking runs and trying to get the Oilers into retaliating, Kane is someone who you can count on to dish it out to. And he could be a guy that's an annoyance for them and maybe can throw the Kings off their game. And That said, Kane did confirm that he's been playing through a sports hernia all season and might not be ready to play game one on Monday, but I hope we'll see him at least at some point in this series. But yeah, for me, if Kane is at his best, you think back to that playoff run 2 years ago against the Kings and Flames, especially those first two series where Kane was the third best player on the team behind McDavid and Draisaitl. So I'll be banking on him to be the X factor for this team if and when he does come back.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he'll be in game one. I don't know for sure, but I know he was practicing full practice. I'm curious about the sports hernia as well. I mean, it was enough so that he missed, you know, the last part of the season.
Yeah, he needed a week off, he said, to just kind of rest it and get back. And hopefully that time off during some largely meaningless games will pay dividends in the playoffs. And Michael, looking at the other side, who do you think will be the biggest game changer on the Kings?
Yeah, you know, it's obviously Kempe led the Kings in scoring, but you got to look at that, you know, second line, Deneau, Arvidsson, Moore, Trevor Moore, when he comes to play, seemingly makes a difference. I've got to say it's either Moore or Deneau and how they play. Like Deneau, is a great two-way player. And has been a bit of a thorn in the side of the Oilers in each time they've played. So, I'd probably be one of the two of them. Let's just say Deneau.
Yeah. I mean, if Dubois ever could get his game on track, I think he would be my pick.
Yeah.
I mean, Quinton Byfield has really taken a step forward this year too. Maybe hasn't lived up to the expectation of a second overall pick yet, but that's another guy I think they have to worry about. I mean, he's a 6'5" frame. He's got a great shot. So if he ends up elevating his play, that could be a player that the Oilers have to be concerned about in this series too.
Yeah. Byfield is a really good mention. I mean, he's one of those players that you just know better things are coming down the road for him. Right. Yeah. And he's certainly been one of those players that could make a big difference.
And just lastly, who do you think will win the series? I think we're on the same page here. And how many, and how many games do you think it'll go?
Yeah. I mean, when I look at these two matchup, I think immediately, I think five, maybe six games tops. I'm going with the Oilers. That's obvious. My only hesitation is it's really hard to beat a team twice, let alone three times. You know, a team like the Kings, like Kopitar and Deneau and these guys, right? Like, they've got something to play for that the Oilers don't have, and that's, you know, the last two series that they had, right? And we saw the Oilers do the same against Dallas in the past, right? Like when they were the underdog and would pull out, you know, a series win. It's tough to beat a team in three consecutive series. So that's my biggest worry. Mm-hmm. But this Oilers team is far and away, I think, the favorite. And so I'd go five or six.
Yeah. 2 years ago, they needed seven games. Last year, they needed six games. I think they'll dust the Kings in no more than five games this year. So I'll say the Oilers in five. I think they'll win both games on home ice, and they'll probably lose one of the two games in LA and come and wrap things up in game five back in Edmonton to move on to the second round. It'll be the first time, if they do pull this off, it'll be the first time since 1990 through 1992 that the Oilers have advanced to the second round of the playoffs in three consecutive years. And they really need to break this game one curse, because they haven't won a game one since the second round of the Western Conference playoffs against the Anaheim Ducks back in 2017. As I mentioned already, that this is their fifth straight year with home ice advantage in the first round, and they've managed to lose in the first game in each of those four other series. So that's a trend that has to end. They also haven't won a game one on home ice since May 2nd, 1990 in the conference final. So it's been a long time. So a couple droughts that need to get snapped tomorrow night, and man, I just can't wait for it to get started.
Yeah, it's, you know, you've been talking about this game one. I think that's a big deal. I think that'll, you know, if they can win game one, it'll be, it'll mean a lot to the team itself.
There's no reason they shouldn't. I mean, the Oilers have been the best. We talked about it, not just the best team in the league since the mid-November, but they've been easily the best team on home ice during that time too. And I think 27 wins in that span on home ice, which is phenomenal, over 5 months to pick up that many wins in your own barn. And there's no reason that shouldn't continue. The Oilers control the matchup. Now, yes, the Kings could put out Dano or Kopitar in any situation, but the Oilers can also put out McDavid or Draisaitl in any situation. And I think it's very important for the Oilers to go up 2-0 in this series. Like I said, it's been 7 years since they've had that type of a commanding lead. So to go on the road up 2-0, I think that also forces the Kings to sort of rethink their strategy. Because if they're just trying to implement that, like I said, that boring 1-3-1 style where they basically just sit back and wait for the other team to make a move, it might make them sort of just say, okay, we need to do something different because it's not working. Or maybe they'll just say it didn't work on the road, but it will work at home. But at some point, the Kings are going to have to win a game in Edmonton to win this series. You can't win when you don't have home ice advantage. You can't win the series unless you at least take one road victory. So I'm hoping that it forces them to sort of trade chances a little more with the Oilers, because we know when other teams decide to play loose with the Oilers, it usually goes in Edmonton's favor because they can't match us when it comes to that sort of pond hockey style.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'd love if the Kings decided to go toe-to-toe.
now, I won't do a whole breakdown of the entire playoffs for you, but you know, prior to the season, I had three of our guys from the Heavy Hockey Network on the podcast, Bob, Ryan, and Kirk, and the three of us all made our predictions for the season. Three of us had the Oilers winning the Stanley Cup. Ryan had the Oilers losing in the Stanley Cup final. So all four of us still had them making it right to the end. Just without going through each round, just how far do you think the Oilers will ultimately make it this spring?
Yeah, you know, as soon as the bracket came out and the Kings were playing in the other side, I felt pretty good about it. Mm-hmm. I think that the Oilers are, I think they'll make it to the final. I don't want to say one way or the other whether they'll win, not right now, but I think they'll make it to the final this year. And then we're going to have an exciting final. In fact, my pick right now, crazy as it is to see Boston and Edmonton in the final.
A rematch of the 1988 and 1990 Stanley Cup Finals.
That's right.
Let's hope that this series goes the way both of those did as well.
Coincidentally, a rematch of Maroon versus Perry again. And
yeah.
And, you know, let's hope that Perry's got the upper hand this time.
Yeah. I mean, look, I sort of mentioned this earlier, but I just feel like the first chance that McDavid gets to play in the final, he's not going to let that opportunity slip away.
Oh yeah. We're going to see an even other side of Connor McDavid.
We haven't seen his final form yet. Yeah. And I just feel like this is a guy who is so hungry to win. Draisaitl too. And you know, I know a lot of people say, well, everybody wants to win, and sure, but to reach this level of a player, to get to the heights that those two have reached, they've been special hockey players their entire lives, especially at the NHL level now, where it's highlighted more than anywhere else. And, you know, when you're that dominant of a player, you just want to win. And they know that that's their legacy is not necessarily the scoring titles or the records or the point totals they put up, but the championships at the end of the day. And while they have been the two best offensive players in the league, if you look statistically over the past 9 years, they're still looking for that first championship. And you would have thought that two players like that would have already had multiple rings by now, but they're still looking for that first one. And I just think that they are going to be so motivated to make sure that what happened the past 2 years never happens again.
I couldn't agree more. I just think if it goes as expected, just be prepared that this will be one of the single greatest playoff performances we've seen by anyone ever. If you think that Connor McDavid was a run-in for stats leader last year, where they ended up, and just expect something great this year.
Well, I'll just quickly say, my three predictions, when I had the guys on, as I mentioned, we did three bold predictions each, and I still feel like I would have hit both of my regular season predictions if McDavid was fully healthy. I had McDavid getting 100 assists, which I was right on. I also had McDavid getting 164 points, which would be 2 points per game for the full season. And I maintain that if he was healthy and played all 82 games, he would have done it. And I think he'll do it next season. But the other one is still yet to be determined. And that was, I said McDavid is going to have 50 points in the playoffs this year. And Wayne Gretzky holds the single season playoff scoring record with 47 points, which he set back in 1985. And I mean, if you look at it, the Oilers were beating teams so convincingly that if the sum of those series would have went a few games longer, maybe Gretzky would have hit 60 points, but they were beating teams in four or five games. So it actually kind of limited him on his offensive potential. Now, I don't think the Oilers are going to roll over the opposition as easily as the 85 team did. So because of that, if you look at his points per game average the past 2 years and multiply it by six or seven games each series, there's a real chance that he could be in that 45 to 50 point range. So I think that if they do make it all to the final, he will take a real run at Gretzky's record.
Absolutely. I honestly think if they make it that far, just know this might be one of the greatest playoff performances we'll have ever watched.
And I mean, credit to Draisaitl too. He's been right there with him, with McDavid. I mean, last year he even was ahead of him in points, but the year before when McDavid had his incredible, I believe it was 33 points in the playoffs, Draisaitl was just 1 point behind. So, and Draisaitl even set the record for most points in one series with 17, breaking the record that McDavid had just tied the series before with 14. So, just two incredible players. And, you know, I've already kind of highlighted this, but the two guys who are the most valuable players on this team, obviously. And even though that there is more talent around them than in past years, they're still going to be the driving forces for this team.
Yeah. Yeah. I couldn't say it any better.
Well, Michael, before we wrap up tonight, I'm sure a lot of people listening to this podcast already do follow you, but where can they find you and what do you have coming up this week?
Yeah, they'll find me at Oilers Live as part of the Heavy Hockey Network with yourself and the rest of the bunch of guys at heavyhockey.com. You can find us Wednesdays, typically at 5 p.m. Mountain, streaming live as a friend of Edmonton Sports Talk, which you can hear us on TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio Live, or follow that up at youtube.ca/heavyhockey if you want to watch.
So everyone, please go give Michael a follow if you're not already following him. You can also follow me at Eric J. Friesen, and you can follow this podcast at 99 Forever Pod. Michael, always great to talk to you. I look forward to doing this again. Just let's go Oilers, and hopefully the next time we're doing a podcast together, we're talking about a Stanley Cup championship.
Can't wait.
All right. So for Michael Hebert, I'm Eric Friesen. This has been the 99 Forever Podcast. We're out.